It's 8:06. Good morning. You're listening to KPCW's Local News Hour. I'm Grace Dorfler, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. Taking a look at the traffic first of all, for any commuters out there, things look relatively clear across the region. I'm seeing some slowdowns at the, if you're heading eastbound on I-80, you might encounter some delays at that Kimball Junction exit or at the Heber exit where you take 80 to get to 40. I'm also seeing some slight delays in Heber City southbound on Main Street. Other than that, nothing too major to report on the traffic front. It's 32 degrees in Park City, mostly clear skies, 43 degrees in the Heber Valley. With details on the weather outlook, ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Happy Monday, KPCW listeners. It's time for a look at your Monday forecast for the Wasatch Back. We're looking at plenty of sunshine after some overnight morning rain showers and snow showers. Briefly, we're looking at drying conditions with clearing skies. Lots of sunshine later today with highs in the upper 40s. That's it for us in Park City. So much cooler than our Sunday afternoon. High temperatures in the Heber Valley with all that sunshine, only in the mid-50s. So again, we're going to be about 15 to 20 degrees cooler this afternoon compared to our Sunday. So make sure you dress appropriately for that. Otherwise, tonight, get ready for clear skies, perfect radiational cooling conditions. What does that mean? That means temperatures are going to drop. And yeah, we're going to wake up to temperatures in the Heber Valley. I think many areas down into the mid-20s come early Tuesday morning. We'll see those temperatures dropping down into the upper 20s to right around 30 in Park City. But it is going to be a cold start to our Tuesday. As we go throughout your Tuesday afternoon, though, we've got sunshine, a light westerly wind. That'll boost those temperatures a little warmer than what we see today. We'll look at high temperatures on your Tuesday afternoon into the upper 50s in Park City, and we should climb back into the low 60s in the Heber Valley. As we move towards your Wednesday, that sunshine will be sticking around across the area. Another freezing start to the day for us in the Heber Valley and in Park City, but high temperatures warm back into the mid 60s in Park City Wednesday afternoon. We'll see those highs in the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. We'll have a few extra clouds on the increase by late Wednesday and then Wednesday night, and by early Thursday morning, that could lead to an isolated shower or two sneaking by the area. Most of that will remain to the south, but there is a slight chance Wednesday night into Thursday morning. Temperatures will be dropping down into the mid to upper 30s Thursday morning with highs in the mid to upper 50s city and low 60s valley. We end the work week on Friday with lots of sunshine and temperatures into the upper 50s for highs in Park City, mid 60s for highs in the Heber Valley, but the weekend will bring change. Look for increasing clouds on Saturday, highs in the 50s in Park City, highs in the low 60s in the Heber Valley, and by Saturday night into Sunday, a stronger storm system moves in, bringing us a chance of rain and some snow to the area as temperatures dip back into the 40s, low 40s for highs in Park City, low 50 for the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back. I'm ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Well, coming up on Local News Hour this morning, we've got a full show. Summit County Clerk Eve First starts out the hour. She has updates on early voting, mail-in ballots, and important election deadlines ahead of those municipal elections November 4th. Then we have an update from the Youth Sports Alliance. Executive Director Emily Fisher will be on the show. She'll be joined by YSA's Development Director. And the Park City Assistant Recreation Director, Tate Shaw, will close out the hour with updates on what's going on with recreation, including upcoming events at the Mark. In local news, thousands of Utahns gathered at No Kings rallies across the state Saturday to protest Trump administration policies. That included protesters across the Wasatch Back, from Heber City to Camas. The Salt Lake Tribune reports an estimated 11,000 people filled the steps at the Capitol in Salt Lake City for a peaceful protest, while smaller groups mobilized in Ogden, Moab, Cedar City, and more. In the Wasatch Back, the Park Record reports over 1,000 people waved signs and sang outside City Hall in Heber. And in Camas, a small contingent of about 7 people gathered on a street corner for a local protest. NPR reports this weekend marked the second massive wave of nationwide No Kings protests, with events in all 50 states. Organizers estimated Saturday's rallies drew nearly 7 million protesters across the country. And the new owners of the DeGioia Center in Camas have broken their silence on plans for the event center and its surrounding area. KPCW's Connor Thomas reports they include a hotel and a parking garage.
The new owners of the DeGioia Center at High Star Ranch in Camas discussed tentative plans for the property publicly for the first time Tuesday. Those include building a new hotel, underground parking garage, and 17 homes, the details of which are subject to change. George Wright acknowledged before the Camas City Council he and the other new owners have been as quiet as they possibly can until now.
We've sort of taken the approach that we're reluctantly but willingly willing to have some short-term bewilderment, frustration, all that. Everyone wants to hear from us. But we don't want to step into a meeting where we start explaining some of our ideas without them being fully where they need to be.
He admitted some apprehension about the Tuesday meeting because the hotel plans are not complete. High Star Ranch's development agreement, which the new owners inherit, allows a hotel with up to 150 rooms and 170,000 square feet. The reason for the meeting was to ask the city of Camas for a public infrastructure district, or PID, to finance the development. PIDs allow developers to issue low-interest rate municipal-style bonds. They then impose a property tax to pay off the debt only on future property owners within the PID's boundaries. The DeJoria owners said the PID would only include the land they own, and it would not include existing residents. That means the residents wouldn't have to pay the tax. But city attorney Joel Yellowhorse, who says he's paid to be negative, asked council members to consider that people who purchase property within the PID will become constituents. He says they might become the loudest voices in future citywide tax discussions.
10, you know, 15 years down the line, taxes have to go up. It's going to be these people that are living in this PID area. They're going to come to you and say, hey, my tax bill is ginormous now. Please don't raise taxes to fix the sewer system.
The PID's draft governing documents say it could raise up to $50 million. A second discussion is scheduled for October 28th with a possible council vote November 17th. One of Wright's partners, Orem developer Mitch Burton, says the team would like to have a PID in place before Christmas.
Take advantage of the paperwork and the planning and getting all the permits and stuff that we need through the winter and start next spring.
Burton says the hotel would be a five-star Marriott hotel while emphasizing that the details will change throughout the planning process. He also indicated the DeJoria Center itself may not be going away.
What we've learned is the event center drives the hotel, not the other way around. The hotel won't affect the event center whatsoever.
A third DeJoria partner, Shane Starr, says they would like to offer existing Camas residents discounted hotel rooms and access to amenities, as well as use the PID to restore Beaver Creek Park. He indicated they hope to reopen the High Star Ranch Country Store and Cafe 2. The store and the rest of the DeJoria Center-related businesses closed in December 2024. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
In the studio with me is Summit County Clerk Eve Furse. She has updates ahead of the November municipal elections. Eve, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Before we get into the nitty-gritty of where and when to vote this election, I have a question about your role. You're the county clerk, and this year we have all municipal elections. So I'm curious if you could tell me a little bit about what a county clerk does. What's the relationship between you and all the town and city clerks?
Sure. So it can vary county by county. The municipal clerks are entitled to run their own elections if they would like to do that. That's gotten harder in recent years with all of the requirements the legislature has put in place. And obviously, we have the equipment to be able to do it very efficiently. And so in our county, all of our municipalities and special districts contract with the county to provide those services in a municipal year. There are still certain things that the municipality continues to control because it makes the most sense for voter engagement. So for instance, the municipalities continue to provide the notices to their members, to the residents about how to vote and what's happening in the election. So they do the noticing. They also are involved at the very beginning of the process with getting the candidates filed, receiving their applications.
Okay, and things like financial disclosures and more of the candidate stuff through the process?
That's exactly right. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I'm never quite clear on who does what during an election.
Right.
So this year, Park City and Camas and all kinds of towns all over Summit and Wasatch counties will be having their elections on November 4th. What about early voting for Summit County voters?
Sure. We have early voting starts the Wednesday before and will continue. So that's the 29th. It'll go Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We will have early voting, and there'll be two locations for that. We always have early voting out at the clerk's office in Colville, and we have it available from 8 in the morning till 4 o'clock on Wednesday through Friday, and then Saturday morning 8 until 1. We also have it available, and this year, this is an important piece for your listeners, the Park City voting location has changed. We've had it historically at Marsac, at the Marsac building at Park City Hall. We're actually shifting this year to the Quinns Junction Summit County building at the health department out there, and we'll be at the lower level conference room. And that will be for early voting as well as day of voting. And early voting there will be from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m.
Okay, gotcha. And is it too late for people to register to vote for this election?
It is not.
Oh, good.
The last day to register for this election and still receive a ballot by mail is this Friday at 5 o'clock. So you have to have your registration in our hands or have completed it online and we've received it by that time, or email it to us that we've received it by that time. So that's by this Friday. We'll also be out to encourage people to drop ballots this Friday. In Park City, we'll be at the market. We'll also be at the County Services Building in Camas, and we'll be in our office, at the clerk's office, and we're happy to help walk people through how to register then. We'll have registration forms with us. And we can accept them that day, as that will be the last day to register and still receive a mail-in ballot.
Okay. And do I remember, obviously, I'm sure your office prefers people be proactive, but people can still register even on election day, right?
Yes. If you come, and in early voting. Mm-hmm. If you miss that deadline, you can come in person to one of our early voting sites or one of our polling locations on election day. And you just need to bring with you identification that proves both you are who you say you are and where you're living. If you have an up-to-date driver's license, that can be both of those things. But if you don't, you'll need to make sure you provide that information to us. And then what you do is you vote provisionally. And when we get it back to the office, we check to make sure that your identification verifies with the databases that are out there. And we register you, and then we count your vote. If we can't, or let's say you didn't bring sufficient identification, then we might reach out to you to indicate the problem. Or you might have been told at the voting location that you need to bring in additional identification, and you have until the Monday following the election to do that.
Okay, good to know. So lots of ways people can vote.
Yes, absolutely.
Awesome, that's good to hear. Let's talk a little bit about postmarks. You mentioned people still will get a mail-in ballot if they register on, you know, this Friday, but it might not get back to you in time unless people use a Dropbox. Could you tell us a little bit about what's changed?
Sure. So the situation now is that for us to be able to count your ballot, we have to have it in clerk's office possession by 8 o'clock on election day. So that could be in one of our drop boxes, the Summit County drop boxes, at the office, or at a voting, at a polling location. So if you've gotten your ballot to that place, put it in the drop box, then we'll be able to count it. If by any chance you put it in the mail and the mail arrives after that time, we won't be able to count your ballot. And it used to be that it was all about the postmark, so you had control over when you could get the postmark. Now, it's not about the postmark, it's about our actually having it in hand. And so that is more reliant on what might happen between the time you put it in the mailbox and the time it gets to us. And we don't have a lot of control over that, and neither does the voter. So if it's starting to get close to election day, you're way better off putting it in a Dropbox or bringing it to a polling location.
Okay, that's good for people to know. What kind of coordination do you do with the local post offices?
Sure. Before an election, we talk to the post to the folks running the post office and talk to them about picking up ballots. We have a process where our employees go to poll workers go and pick up ballots from the post office every morning, and there we have our ballot envelopes are cleared with the post office before we send them out, and they're marked election mail, which means they are supposed to get treated in an expedited fashion, and so we get them back quickly. And the post offices are very aware of that mail and are looking for those, and trying to make sure they get through. If we are hearing that we're having problems, we can check in and see if people's ballots are being delivered by zip code, and if we see we have problems, we might contact a post office and ask them about that. If we're getting feedback that there's a problem, we'll reach out and try and rectify that.
Oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know you could look at zip codes like that.
Yes,
that's
absolutely
cool.
It is. There's a lot of tracking that we're able to do to try and make sure people get their ballots on time. Unfortunately, sometimes what we see is that a ballot was returned, and we don't always know why. And so we can also try and figure that out with the post office and with the voter to get them what they need.
Okay. Do you anticipate you'll see a lot of ballots this year that maybe were postmarked by Election Day but didn't make it to your office?
Well, I have to say our voters were really pretty good at the primary. We always have some ballots that come in after Election Day. That's part of it. But for the primary, people were pretty good about getting them in on time and recognizing the shift in the law. And so hopefully, you know, now that we've had one election under our belt, people have heard the message a couple of times. Hopefully, now they'll continue, that number will continue to decrease.
Good. Could you remind voters where the drop boxes are?
Sure. We have a bunch of them. Locally, in Park City, we've got the Park City Library just outside of there. It's a 24-hour box. The market at Park City is inside right as you walk through the doors into the store, and that is open when the store is open and not otherwise. And then we also have out at the health department in front of the Queens Junction Health Department, there's a drop box there. So those are the Park City boxes. Then we also have at Summit County Courthouse, we have a box inside the building. Again, it is available when the building's open. We have the Summit County Library is an outdoor box. That's available 24/7 at Colville. We also have the library at Camas is open 24/7 and the drop boxes. And then also out at Kimball Junction, we've opened that for this election, the drop box there, and that's open 24/7. That's near the DMV entrance. We also, Oakley City Hall has a box inside, so that's available when that's open. And they're only open Monday through Thursday, so just caution folks on that one. Francis City Hall and Hennifer Town Hall both have outdoor drop boxes. And I think that covers everybody.
That's good. And I assume people can find a list on your website?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, nice. I read a story over the summer that some places are having trouble in Utah getting enough poll workers, and I'm curious if that's something Summit County deals with.
We have been very lucky. We have a lot of engaged people in our community and people who want to be poll workers. And so we have a good list that we can reach out to. Obviously, we try to pair up people so that they're at the closest location to where they live. Sometimes that's not possible, but generally we have been able to have enough poll workers to work everything. If you know somebody who's a poll worker, thank them for helping us. They do get paid a small sum, but it really is because they care about helping people vote, and it's a long day. Certainly on election day, it's a very long day. It's from 7 in the morning until 8 at night, and then they're set up beforehand and take down afterwards. And, you know, sometimes emotions are running high. And so it's really a huge service they do for our community. And we are grateful, and we hope everybody in the community understands and is likewise grateful.
Yeah, that's great. I know you guys put in long days on elections too.
We do.
Yeah. For people who are interested in volunteering, how do they get involved?
Sure. We have applications on our website to be a poll worker if you want to apply to do that. Fill it out to the best of your ability. If you have any questions, you can reach out to us about that. Either by email or phone call. There's also the ability to be a poll watcher. If you just want to see what's going on, there you can also sign up for that. And there's a form to fill out to help us make plan for your participation. And so that's also available on our website. And you can ask if there are particular things about the election process you want to observe, and you can observe those.
Gotcha. Well, anything else you want voters to be aware of heading into Election Day?
I think the big thing is to just keep posted. You can check on our website. You can check on vote.utah.gov to see where you can see where to get a ballot. You can see if you have an election. There are a lot of people who don't have ballots this election, and we do get calls about that. If you're not in a municipality or a district that has an election, then you might not get a ballot this election. But if you have any questions, you can, like I said, you can check on vote.utah.gov, or you can call us, and we're happy to verify that for you.
Awesome. Well, Eve, thanks for all you do.
Thank you.
We've been talking with Summit County Clerk Eve Furse. In the studio with me are Youth Sports Alliance Executive Director Emily Fisher and Development Director Ashley Loxo. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. Well, I know you have your big event of the year coming up this weekend. Ashley, maybe we can start with you to hear a little bit about the Jan's Winter Welcome. It's this Saturday?
Yes, it is. Jan's Winter Welcome is here. This is the 45th annual Jan's Winter Welcome this Saturday up at Stein Erickson Lodge. We are thrilled to have a full house. And just a reminder, this is one event that benefits 8 organizations. So the Youth Sports Alliance and our 7 partner winter sports clubs in town.
Okay, and do you have a fundraising goal for this year?
We do have a goal. Last year we were lucky to hit the $1 million mark, and we would love to have another event that's as successful as that one. And a few ways that the whole community can contribute to that is via our online auction. So the online silent auction opens this Wednesday, October 22nd.
Okay, and what kind of things are you auctioning off this year?
I think we have over 500 packages. Whoa. So in the silent auction, there are trips, sporting goods, restaurants, and all of that goes back to the clubs that originally solicited those items. So it's really a group effort to come together and make the best auction possible.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about the event itself. What's scheduled for the evening?
The event includes a silent auction preview up at Stein Erickson Lodge for the cocktail hour and the first part of the event. And then the group all moves upstairs for the live auction and the presentation. So there are lots of different parts of the night.
Okay. Are tickets still available?
Tickets are not available. We are sold out for this year, but there are still ways to be involved with the silent auction, as I mentioned, as well as the opportunity drawing. So tickets are available for the opportunity drawing prize package, which will be drawn Saturday night, but you do not need to be present to win. So the grand prize for our opportunity drawing this year is a 4-night stay for 4 guests at the HF Bar Ranch in Wyoming. The package includes the cabins, meals, horseback riding, swimming, as well as a $5,000 credit to be used during your trip. So tickets are available at ysausa.org.
Okay, wow, that's quite a price. And I assume a sold-out event is good news for your organization.
It is, yes. Yeah. We appreciate the community support. We have longtime table sponsors and guests that have been joining us for many, many years. And we have new guests that we're welcoming this year as well. So, yes, we're very happy to be sold out.
Wonderful. You mentioned you have quite a lot of partners who also benefit from the event. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, Jan's is our title sponsor, so we really thank Jan Peterson for originally coming up with the idea for Jan's Winter Welcome. So Jan's is the title sponsor, but we also want to say a big thank you to Intermountain. Intermountain Health sponsors our opportunity drawing prize package. They're great partners of ours, and we really appreciate their support.
Okay. And certainly these fundraisers help benefit the youth who participate in your sports programs. Let's talk a little bit about some of those programs. I know the after-school program is a big one. I imagine you're gearing up now that the snow has started to fall a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Jan's Winter Welcome, yeah, as Ashley said, is one event, but it benefits 8 different organizations, the Youth Sports Alliance, and then our 7 partner clubs. And part of the money that we raise at Jan's Winter Welcome for the Youth Sports Alliance does go back to our after-school programs. So I think the big message for this morning is registration is open for all of our YSA ski and snowboard programs. So learn to ski, learn to snowboard, cross country, ski jumping, freestyle, and park and pipe are some of the options. There's really something for all levels. We have beginners, but then intermediate skiers can do those more advanced programs. Last year, nearly 900 students participated in our snow programs. So if you're interested in having your child participate in a program here in Park City on Friday afternoons, Wasatch County, so Heber in Monday afternoons, Wyloming is Thursdays, we sort of have a whole variety. You can go to ysausa.org and check out all of those programs there. We want to make sure that all of the programs are accessible to students from all different kinds of financial backgrounds. So we have scholarships and we have discounts. So some of the discounts are sibling discounts, teacher discounts, first responders discounts, just to ensure that all kids can participate in our programs.
Okay, and it sounds like maybe kids can be a range of experiences. Can they be total beginners and sign up for this?
Absolutely, yeah, total beginners. We have a learn to ski, learn to snowboard program. And also if you're a great skier, you could learn to snowboard or vice versa. So we do have a whole variety of levels. One thing also to note is we really rely on volunteers to contribute time and expertise to make these programs possible. Everything from helping kids zip up their jackets and put on their mittens to riding the bus. We have a formal volunteer program. We want to make sure that all of our volunteers are background checked. But we also have discounts for our volunteers. So if you're interested in volunteering for our programs, helping all those kids get out on snow, you can go to ysausa.org.
Okay. How many volunteers do you need to corral 900 kids?
Hundreds. I think last year we didn't realize quite the number that we have every year, but when we go back and look at it, it is hundreds of volunteers. So just a huge thank you to anyone who's volunteered in the past, and if anybody's interested, we would love to have you volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of mittens to keep track of.
It is a lot of mittens. It's a lot of helmets. But somehow we keep it all together, and everybody has a great time and keeps their hands warm.
That's wonderful. How do you sign up?
You can just go to ysausa.org, and then you search under programs, and you can choose your school district, or if you're a homeschooler, you can choose that option as well. So we have options for all different kinds of things for students from really first through 12th grade.
Okay. And is it one afternoon a week for kids who sign up?
Yes. So we run our programs on the early release days. So depending on where you go to school and what your early release day is, that's when we run programs.
Okay. And what sites do kids go to? Are they all over?
We are very lucky at the Youth Sports Alliance that we have some really amazing partners. Park City Mountain through Vail Resorts Epic Promise is our biggest programs. So we have hundreds of students learning there. We also run programs at Deer Valley, at Woodward, at Utah Olympic Legacy, really all across the Wasatch Back, White Pine Touring, Soldier Hollow, and then for the Wasatch Front, we're exploring resorts down there as well.
Okay. You mentioned registration is open now. What's the deadline to register?
Yeah, so that's very important because we need to run the rosters and get them to the resorts so they have the proper number of ski instructors. You do need to sign up in advance. So that deadline is November 30th. I believe it's midnight, but let's not leave it till midnight. So it's really important to sign up in advance. Every year we have students on the first day of the program sad that they can't join their friends skiing. So it's really important to check out those programs now and sign up at ysausa.org.
Okay, awesome. And how long do the programs run?
Depending on the program, they're anywhere from 4 to 5 weeks. So they usually get out either 4 or 5 times, but you can do multiple things throughout the winter.
Okay, very nice. So you can try different sports through the season.
Yep, exactly. And as I said, we do have different scholarship levels, so you can go in and check those out because we want to make sure that all students can participate. We have some amazing gear and equipment sponsors for students that are on scholarship. We make sure that they get skis and boots and helmets and goggles and gloves and clothing to make sure that everybody participates in a safe and comfortable way.
That's great to hear. Now, these are not the only scholarships you offer. Tell me a little bit about the other ones that you offer for athletes performing maybe at a more advanced level.
Yeah, correct. So we have scholarships for students to try their sports, try lots of different things, see if they see what they like, see what they're passionate about. And then we have a second scholarship, the Stein Erickson Endowment, and this is for students and athletes that are in our 7 partner clubs. So these are bigger scholarships. They're for funding students who are training in sort of a whole season-long program or a year-long program. So we have 2 scholarship application periods. One is in the fall, and that is for their annual costs. And then in the spring, we have sort of a second chance if athletes qualify for a competition they weren't expecting, which typically is more expensive, something like a national championships, junior world, something like that. They can apply for a scholarship in the spring. But we just recently awarded $190,000 in scholarships this fall to support those athletes in those 7 winter sport clubs. And then our goal is to award another about $35,000 in the spring. So totally, we're going to give award $225,000 this year through the Stein Erickson Endowment Fund.
Okay, and how many athletes benefit from those scholarships?
Gosh, that's a good question. It's been going up every year. I think last year it was 137 different students. You know, we have everybody who, athletes who are just starting out to athletes that are just on the cusp of qualifying for the national team. So it's kind of a wide variety of athletes and programs.
Okay. And what kind of sports do they represent?
So the athletes do need to be in one of our 7 partner clubs. So that is Figure Skating Club of Park City, Park City Ice Miners, which is the hockey club, Park City Speed Skating Club, Park City Ski and Snowboard, Utah Olympic Park Skeleton and Bobsled, Wasatch Freestyle, and Wasatch Luge Club.
Okay, very nice. And so are these mostly high school students?
You know, as I said, we really have a variety. Some of the sports are geared much, much younger. The Figure Skating Club of Park City, those athletes really start quite young. Then some of the later entry sports like bobsled, skeleton, or luge, those students are older. We do cap our scholarships for students under 21 years of age. So we do see a wide variety. Everyone who's kind of just starting out and really needs help to be able to participate in that club. Without this scholarship, they would not be able to do this program. To really athletes who are right on the cusp of the Olympics last year, or sorry, in 2022, we had, you know, athletes who are at the Olympic Games who receive scholarship funding from us. So it is a wide variety.
That must be really cool to see athletes, you know, at every level.
Yeah, it's great. And they all have really compelling stories, and they all really are passionate about their sports. And we just want to make sure that if they have that passion and they're working hard, that they have the opportunity to participate.
Gotcha. And is there a deadline to apply for these scholarships as well?
So that deadline is in August. Mm-hmm. So it's from August 1st to August 31st. And then we'll have a second scholarship period, as I said, in the spring, if athletes qualify for competitions they weren't expecting.
Okay. Well, as always, YSA has a lot going on.
Always, yes. It's been abundant, but we are grateful to the community for all their support. And we're really looking forward to Jan's Winter Welcome.
And if I could just chime in with 2 last thank yous. With hundreds of items in the auction, it couldn't be possible without the support of generous businesses and donors in town. So along the Wasatch back and the Wasatch front, and honestly, nationally, we get such great support with those donations. So thank you to anyone who donated to the auction and then also to the volunteers. As Emily mentioned, our programs couldn't happen without volunteers, and Jan's Winter Welcome couldn't happen without the volunteers. So thank you to all the parents in the club, coaches who step up and really help us.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Is there anything either of you would like to add this morning?
No, I think, again, just to echo Ashley, we're very excited for our event and just very grateful to the community for their support of auction items, volunteer hours, opportunity drawing tickets, table support. Very grateful that our community continues to support Jan's Winter Welcome in its 45th year.
Great to hear. We've been speaking with Emily Fisher and Ashley Loxo from the Youth Sports Alliance. Thank you. The North Summit Fire District has declared its intent to raise taxes this year. It's only about 5%, but Summit County Council members still worry about public perception. KPCW's Connor Thomas explains.
Fire District staff began the truth in taxation process Wednesday by notifying Summit County Council members they intend to raise an additional $100,000 next year with a 4.56% property tax increase. North Summit Fire Chief Ben Nielsen says it's for ongoing operating costs.
We're not asking to expand any, you know, any programs or anything like that. We're not asking to grow. We're just asking to keep up with inflationary costs and, you know, tariffs that hit us hard.
It would be $3 extra annually for every $100,000 in a primary residence home value. The Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District is also proposing an increase this year of around $3 per $100,000. The county council generally votes on service district budgets in December. Council Chair Tanya Hansen, who represents North Summit, expressed her worries about public perception since a 300% increase in 2022 is still on residents' minds.
Because we just passed a emergency services sales tax.
Nielsen noted the fire district doesn't have any say over how that tax is spent, since it's levied by Summit County. Council Chair Candace Hart says Utah law requires a strict timeline to raise property tax revenue. He recommended the fire district keep the process moving so all the options are on the table. Summit County is a financial supporter of KPCW. Connor Thomas, KPCW News.
Well, joining me in the studio is Park City Recreation Assistant Director Tate Shaw. Tate, good morning.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. There's a lot going on, as always, in Park City. Let's start with some of the capital projects going on.
Sounds good. So we've got a lot of things happening in the recreation world when it comes to new infrastructure. A couple things that are happening as we speak are the new community pools that are happening at the PC Mark. That construction is moving along, right along timing. We're excited to be able to have new pools open for next summer. Northridge Construction's been doing a great job in the efforts of what's happening there. There has been some impact by way of just the construction effort that's going on to the PC Mark with parking and things like that. But we really are grateful for the community for their understanding, support, as you know, we've had limited parking at times and then having to block spots off for different projects associated with that. But that's well underway. And you know, they're working on continued infrastructure, getting everything situated and taken care of. The new slide and pump house features are coming along close. It's going to be awesome. And you know, with the leisure pool officially being torn out here in the last month after we finished the summer season, just giving an idea of how big the space really is, it's going to open up our property in a way to give a little bit more visual appearance for those who are in the building looking out to the outdoor tennis and pickleball courts, to plaza space in addition to the new pool. So we're excited for that.
That's exciting.
It's great.
Will people be able to use the new lap pool next summer? Or
yes, both pools are intended to be open for the summer season. And so as long as we always joke and say whenever we have large capital projects, we're going to have a huge snow winter. And we all, of course, would like that. But the anticipation for timing and all is that those pools will be open. Both the leisure and the lap pool will be open for summer next year.
Oh, great. Yeah. Even with some delays was the last I heard.
Yeah. And so, you know, just with timing of where things are, you know, we've got a few things that are out there with the tariff issues and concerns associated with that, but also just the impacts of construction and doing this during the winter months. The company has done a good job to really hope and expedite the process. They're bringing in a couple different pool crews for the actual build of the pool, not just the infrastructure. So things are moving along.
That's awesome. I'm sure the lap swimmers of the Mark will be thrilled to hear that.
Yeah, they're going to be excited. You know, and that pool is going to be bigger in overall capacity, and we're excited to be able to have more participation there with the pool. schools as a whole.
Nice. Couple added lanes.
Correct. Yeah. So we will have 8 lap lanes. It will sit a little bit further back on the property than it has been in the past. But we're still very confident that it's going to be a phenomenal experience for both the residents and of the neighborhood and also that of the actual pool user.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
So the other capital projects that we've got going on, everybody's probably very well aware of, is the community center project that's happening at City Park. That project is moving along very, very quickly. There was a lot of site work and impact that was done due to sewer line, water line, and other infrastructure that needs to be done. And that's been going along very well. Oakland Construction has been doing a great job with the project management and then also with the actual construction work itself. So that is moving along well. A couple things that have been of notable impacts there, the sewer line impact that was there on Sullivan has been completed. We've done some new asphalt work that's been there to help patch that up. There will be more asphalt work that will come at a future date, likely next spring, early summer, that will help to just mitigate some of the impacts that are there. You know, the mechanical room footings have been formed. They were poured last week. Water tie-in is actually happening this week for some of the bypass stuff that's been happening. So they're doing well with that. We know that there's some impacts in the general area, but in the long run, this is going to be something we look back at and say, wow, that went fast, and the community impact's going to be great.
Yeah, every time I bike past there, it feels like it looks different.
Yeah, they're moving quick. Yeah. They're moving very quick, which is exciting.
Could you remind listeners what all will be included in the new community center?
So the new community center is going to be a 15,000 square foot facility that will have a multi-purpose classroom space. It will have a half court, basically, sized gymnasium space that will be multi-purpose use. Then we'll have a large community room space, as well as just other more of that staff infrastructure need that's there, offices, things of that nature. But we will have a catering kitchen. We'll be able to have large events there. I like to think about it like this, of, you know, if you've tried to use the community room or some of the spaces at the library in the last few years, the library is busy, and we're going to add an additional space for some inventory for people to be able to use. So if you think of the community room, think of that, but at a little bit of a larger scale and more of a true square shape. So we're excited to be able to have that for public rentals, for community events, for things of that nature.
Okay.
So it's going to be great.
Nice.
Yeah. The other capital project that we have going on that people might not be fully aware of is we are adding new stadium sports lights out on the stadium field at Quinn's Junction at the sports complex there. This is right adjacent to the ice arena, basically the amphitheater seating, the grass seating, and the stairs that are there on basically the east side of the ice arena. We are adding lights on that. So that project is really close to being completed. You're going to see the towers flown pretty quickly and get up. We've been dealing with some of the weather, and obviously we don't want to have major impact on the turf itself based on the weather and the rain. So we've been dealing with that a little bit. Interestingly enough, the foresight of that original building of the sports complex, we actually added conduit lines to be able to add future lights when warranted. So we were able to tie right into that with part of that strategic plan. So that's great. So we're moving along fast with that one.
That was good of your past selves to look out for future, Mark.
Yeah, you know, it's a good thing. People are thinking ahead, which is great.
That's great to hear.
Yeah, so that's really a quick update on our capital projects. We've got a lot of other things just by way of normal operations and things as well, if you'd like to discuss those.
Sure. I would love to talk briefly about the tennis bubble as well.
Perfect.
Listeners may recall the freak windstorm that took out your old bubble. How's the new one working out?
The new one's good. The new one is a new structure. It's a little tighter, sits a little bit taller. It has presented a few staff challenges as well due to just that in general. So it's a little more noisy. So staff's working through some mitigation efforts there. We've added some sound paneling in areas we would get a little bit of that echo to the point that it was impacting play. And so staff has worked diligently with the manufacturer, with other staff as well, to try to mitigate that. So it's working good. We also, because of the volume, the heat, it can be a little tricky with some of the heating elements. So our staff has done, has worked to basically add, as part of facility improvements, they've worked with the manufacturer over the summer to address some of these challenges. We've got some elevated fans that are installed to help move some of the air that sometimes gets trapped in those taller spaces and things. So we've had positive results. We've had some community conversation where some of our patrons have expressed that it's working, and that's good. We're continuing to work on those heat and acoustics in the bubble for the long term as well, not just short term solutions.
That's great to hear. And how are you balancing tennis versus pickleball?
Yeah, so the indoor bubble play, the court allocation subcommittee, which is a group of community members as well as recreation advisory board members and then staff, have worked to balance basically the play. And so ultimately, it really is largely remaining the same and similar as it was last year. Few adjustments have been made. So on Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m., previously dedicated time to pickleball, this block is now actually going to have side-by-side play in an effort to try to maximize usage. That's free of charge, so if people want to play there on Saturdays. Also, Mondays and Wednesday afternoons, there's been adjustments to the tennis programming that have created additional reservable time. So that's something that's there. One of the key elements that we want the community to be aware of is coming up soon is we will have online-only court reservations. And the effort for this is it's transitioning to some payment perspectives that will be happening around the first of the year. But right now, all court reservations are going to be made starting November 3rd, online only. So there's a little bit of a grace period there, but we'll no longer be accepting reservations over the phone or in person at the front desk, and that's preparatory for what's coming. We've got signs posted and all. We're excited for what this is going to help us with efficiencies. So we're trying to just make sure we have a smooth transition there. So the bubble's great. The bubble schedule will officially start November 3rd. It will feature designated times for both tennis and pickleball, and you can find all this information out further and more detail at our website, parkcityrecreation.org.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And tell me what else is on the calendar coming up soon.
Wow. So we've got a lot. Our team is busy. We've got a lot of youth programming. We've got some adult offerings as well. So I'll just run through some fun, fast things that we have going on. So we, for many, many years, have worked with the Youth Recreation Advisory Board and staff to ultimately do free student admission. So on Fridays, as part of early out, from 12 to 3 p.m. during the school year, it's free access to the PC Mark who live within the Park City School District boundaries, and that's something that we just always love to pass along as well. Excuse me. Some fun things for some of the younger ages from 7 to 12, we have Nerf battles. So it's an opportunity where youth can go into the gymnasium and have some fun playing with their Nerf war items and such. And we set up little target spaces for the kids to be able to run around. And that's been a fun thing. In addition to that, that's happening this coming Friday. In addition to that, we also have a kids' night out program that our recreation supervisory team puts together where parents can go have a night out, but instead it's kids get the night out. So it's activities, there's pizza, they're going to head to Hangtime Adventure Park this coming Friday. So if you're looking for something to do, check that out for this coming Friday. And that runs from 5 to 9 p.m. And drop off is at the PC Mark. For the adults, we have ongoing community classes. So we have first aid and CPR classes that are running, and we have our next community class November 12th. So if you're looking to renew your CPR and first aid certifications, come check in with us. We'd love to have you join us there. So that's just a few. Then we get into the group fitness side of things. We have line dancing. Line dancing is one of those things that's a lot of fun. It just started for this current session, but you can also show up for just drop-in if you'd like as well. That runs on Tuesdays, Tuesday evenings from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the PC Mark as well. A community event that's free that's coming up that we're excited about. This is in collaboration with Momentum Recycling, is the Pumpkin Smash. So this will be, what, our third year, I believe. And this is a great opportunity to minimize the impact of having pumpkins after the, you know, holiday season from Halloween ending up in the landfill. And so this is a fun way to be able to come and smash your pumpkins in a way that isn't creating a public nuisance or in your neighborhood or whatnot. But it's fun. We kind of joke around and say, bring your pumpkins, have a smashing good time, turn them into compost through fun, hands-on destruction. And sometimes that word gets people excited. But that will be November 8th. That's going to be at City Park, and that's a free event. So if you're looking and wondering, what do I do with my pumpkins after Halloween, hang on to them for a few days, mm-hmm. and then bring them to City Park, where we will have this fun event where you can drop them off of things, you know, throw them at targets and things like that, and all of it gets cleaned up and sent off to Momentum Recycling.
That's fun.
Yeah. You know, in addition, we just have upcoming things that are happening preparatory for the winter season. We have waxing workshops. So if you want to be a DIYer and do your own waxing on your skis and snowboards, come check in November 13th and 18th. And then we have some classes December 4th and into the latter part of December. But that's an opportunity where staff will actually work through the process of proper waxing skis and getting them prepped for the season. So that's just a few. I know, you know, time's short, but we could go on and on and on about programming opportunities we have.
And I assume people can find everything online?
Everything online at parkcityrecreation.org, and, you know, check in with staff as well. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of activities going on.
Wow, you truly have stuff for all ages.
Yeah, we try to.
Awesome.
So, yeah, one thing that I will finish with is we have a free activity on... a free demo for a class on the 25th, and that's from noon to 1, and that is for Apex Hapkido and Jiu-Jitsu that we'll be offering. So it's a free demo if you would like to check in on that as well at the PC Mark on Friday, or excuse me, on the 25th, this next Saturday.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
So much to choose from.
A lot of activities.
Well, Tate, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Park City Recreation Assistant Director Tate Shaw.